This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I will be talking to E.A. Smeraldo about The Silent Count, and it is all about, climate change. And so I was really happy when I'm going to be talking now to somebody very famous, Tess Gerritsen, about, oh my goodness, book number 13 in the Rizzoli and Isles series. And I love the start of the book because I will tell her why. Hi, Tess.
Hello. Hi. I'm talking to you from beautiful Maine.
Okay. Well, you know, of course, in the new book, and it's called, you know, Listen to Me. And I already told all of my, I've been telling all of my listeners, listen to me on Thursday, because I'm going to have Tess Gerritsen on. And they're all so excited. I got some really nice emails because, of course, this is there's been a sort of a dry spell here between books about Resilient Isles.
Yes, there has been. In fact, I thought that after book 12, I might be done with this series. And I wrote two other books that were out of the series. And then I started hearing the voice of Jane Rizzoli's mother, Angela, talking to me. And she said, if you see something, say something. And I thought, what are you seeing, Angela? And that started the book.
That started the book. Well, that's great. And, of course, it starts off, I love this opening scene. It starts off with Amy. And it reminded me of, you know, I'm here in Clearwater, Florida. So, and it was years and years since I had been up north in, actually, certainly in cold weather, or what I thought was springtime. And I went to Boston, and I had a beautiful pair of shoes. Beautiful. And they were green because, you know, it was around St. Patrick's Day. And I was really so thrilled with these shoes. I mean, you know, strappy shoes, nice shoes. And then I get to Boston and it's cold. And I forgot.
Well, you know, our spring, I live in Maine, which is even colder, but our spring sometimes doesn't start well into May.
Yeah.
So yeah, I keep my boots on and probably into May, so my strappy shoes don't come out till midsummer.
Well, so the opening scene, of course, is great, and we know that this we know it's going to be exciting. And as I said, this is not a baker's dozen is a great thing. My mother used to love places that gave baker's dozen. So a baker's dozen. We now have book 13, and everyone who loves Rizzoli and Isles, and I'm sort of always been on the Isle side because I worked in a hospital and in a lab, and so I love the medical side. But it's pretty thrilling for you to have it out, and actually now it's after, we hope, the pandemic, so you can actually get out there and meet some of your fans.
Yeah, I did. I just got back from a book tour in England.
Wow.
Not so much traveling in the U.S. yet, because I think people aren't quite ready to come out to book events. And also, travel in the U.S. this summer has been a bear, so especially on the airlines. The English tour went great, and I think people are really excited about seeing Jane and Maura come back.
Oh yeah, definitely. I love Maura. As I said, I remember when book one came out of the series, because it was called The Surgeon, and when I was young, I worked in a lab as a lab technician. I was at Mount Zion Hospital in San Francisco, and I had my own apartment. I didn't want to share with anybody. But that, in The Surgeon, it's really creepy. That was really a creepy storyline of somebody sneaking in, you know. And I always remember that when it came out. And, of course, Rizzoli wasn't the main character. I mean, she was a main character, but it wasn't – nobody knew what was going to happen to this series.
Well, I didn't know what was going to happen. In fact, I didn't know it was going to be a series. That first book, The Surgeon, as you mentioned, Rizzoli was just a secondary character. And I had plans to kill her in the book. But she survived and went on to star in the second book. And then I introduced Mara Isles in that second book. And by the third book, I realized I had a series that featured two women. And it's funny that you like Mara, because Mara is actually me. She's modeled very much after my own personality and my own profession. And a lot of the details you find out about Mara, such as what wine she drinks, what car she drives, is all taken from my life. So I feel very close to Mara. But on the other hand, she gets boring to me. So then I switch to Jane's point of view.
Well, I as you know, having once you worked in a lab, I started working in hospitals at the age of 14 as a candy striper. And so, you know, I spent so many years in hospital environment that I love the lab environment. I love being in a laboratory. So Moira really is my kind of gal.
Well, you know, it's funny because I know a number of pathologists, and they're probably like you. They feel, and so do I, most comfortable around lab equipment in quiet surroundings. Oh. Maybe not as comfortable around crowds, and that would be Mara.
Yeah. I used to love to take the night shift. If I could get I love the night shift. I love being just in that environment at night, which, you know, some people would find creepy, but I just loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, well, so do I. You know, when I was in college, one of my projects as a anthropology major was to measure the bones that were stored in the Stanford Museum basement. And I often did that late at night, just me and skeletons. And it was kind of a quiet, you know, I felt really comfortable there. And most people would think it's creepy, but that's what I found comfortable.
Well, of course, I was the kind of kid who loved horror films, too. So it was perfect for me. And I know that you like horror films because I had read one, I think I read somewhere or heard somewhere, maybe I did see you speak at an event once, that you liked horror films when you were a kid.
Well, my mother loved horror films, so I grew up on those. You know, this was even before the MPAA ratings, so my mom didn't really pay attention to ratings anyway. She just took us kids to every scary movie that was ever made. And I grew up in this steady diet of horror films, really getting the idea that horror was the height of entertainment.
And so many of them had doctors in them, too.
Yes, and yes, just, you know, most horror films have a scientist in there that people don't listen to. So now when I write, I probably fall back on that sense of you got to scare them to entertain them.
And you do that. you do that. You know, with the new book, as you said, now Angela has stepped forward, and she's been sort of in the background before, but you know, that was interesting that you have this dynamic suddenly that after 5 years, she speaks to you.
Yes. Well, you know, she's been in the series from the very beginning, and we've seen her life change. She starts off being a pretty contented wife and mother. She's been a housewife all her life, and then her husband leaves her around book 5 or 6. I can't remember when her husband leaves her. So we've seen in the last couple of books, Angela tried to readjust her life. Now she's single. Now she's alone. And we find out that she's always been a very, very clever woman, a very observant woman, and a mom. So here she is in her suburban street, looking out her window, and she sees things. She notices what's going on in her neighborhood. She realizes the people that have just moved in across the street are a little bit odd, and she thinks something is going on in that house across the street. But the problem is, and most of us have problems, she can't convince her daughter. You know, I'm a mother, and I think that as we get older, we become less and less visible as women. And that's how Angela's feeling. She's feeling a little bit invisible.
Well, in this book, as she gets a great part, I can tell you.
Yeah, well, she gets to play a little sleuthing. She does a little sleuthing herself, and because she can't convince her daughter, the homicide detective, to look into this couple across the street.
So we have that. We have quite a few threads running through this book, different storylines. How did all of that come about?
You know, I didn't know. All I knew at the beginning of the story, and this is for those who are writers or people who are thinking about writing mysteries, I don't plan things ahead of time. I'm what you would call, some people call them pantsers. I'm a plunger. I get this initial idea, and I just see what happens. All I knew at the beginning was Angela sees something in her neighborhood, but it's not what she thinks it is, and she can't get her daughter to pay attention. In the meantime, her daughter and Maura Isles are investigating their own mystery having to do with a dead nurse. And where it all comes together, I really don't remember how it all clicked for me. Maybe halfway through or two-thirds through, I understood what these two mysteries were and how they were somehow going to intersect. And it's kind of a magical process when that happens. All of a sudden, your light bulb goes off in your head, and you think, oh, that's how this all comes together. So, I really can't tell you how I did put it together.
But you found it, and, well, the characters are in your head. And that's a joy, really, that I talk about of why I named this program Joy on Paper, because it is such a joy to, first of all, see your words on paper, and also the joy of characters taking over your mind. It's a wonderful, enriching environment in that brain of yours.
Well, that's exactly right. If I can hear a character's voice in my head, I let them take over. I let them tell the story. And that's a big burden off me because somebody else is telling the story. And it is a mysterious process. And I think it has to do with just channeling people. And I know what Angela sounds like. I know the kinds of things she would say, outrageous as they may be. And I let her, I just give her the stage.
Well, of course, we all know it's going to be a tremendous success. The book is just, it's a great read. It's a fun read with lots of twists and turns that we expect from you. Great writing. And it's just nice that, you know, you are like this, I don't know, you know, when writers are looking at success stories, I'm sure many of writers look at you and say, "Why, well, you know, you've done it all. A great medical career as a doctor, and then a writing career. First, and as a romance writer, which most people don't realize that you won a Rita Award for your romance writing, which is terrific. If people go, I don't know how, nowadays, if the people are reading, I don't know how much you promote your romance stories, but they're fine works.
Yeah, well, you know, I've never felt confined to any particular genre. I find all genres difficult to write. So in the course of my, oh my gosh, it's been 35 years as a writer, I have done romance and crime and medical thrillers and science fiction and historicals. But it's always based on what's, you know, which story captivates me, and I don't really think too much about where it fits into which genre or where the market is. If a story grabs you and you need to tell it, you just do it.
Exactly. And the wonderful thing about being a writer is you can keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And, you know, the last time I spoke to Mary Higgins Clark, she was 89 years old, and she was still as enthusiastic at 89 as she was at 29. So that's a joy of writing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, we're so lucky. We get to do what, we get to live vicariously through our characters. So, I'll never be a cop. I could never be a cop. If I write about cops, and so I sort of feel like I know the life. And that's fun. You get to step into other people's lives and other people's heads. and experience adventures that we ourselves don't ever get to. And every morning, it's like, what's going to happen next? And that's the fun of this job.
Have you ever put a character in your books of somebody that from your real life who you didn't like and you killed him off?
I've done that a couple of times. Yeah, I'm not going to say who they were.
Yeah, you don't say who they are. But I'm writing some stuff, and I will say that in my books, several lawyers might die along the way because I've had a bad relationship with lawyers.
Oh yeah, no Shakespeare.
Yeah, we, well, very very bad because I was in Hollywood and I wrote some scripts and I adapted some books for a film. So I unfortunately got involved in a lawsuit over there. And when you're young, you do not sue a movie studio. I'm just advising everybody out there. When you're young, don't sue. Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually a losing proposition, no matter how.
Oh yeah,
you know how powerful your
taking. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why I'm in Florida, but I love Florida better than California anyway. Which reminds me,
I was thinking the great thing about books is that the book industry is a far more ethical industry than the movie industry. So, and the other thing that's great about writing books is that even if you can't find a publisher. In this day and age, there are independent publishers. You can self-publish on Amazon. You can still get your book out there. So it's something that anybody who has a burning desire to do can do.
That's right. You can even be in Maine. As a matter of fact, there are so many writers in Maine. I have writers in Maine all the time, especially during the winter. I had so many of them talking to me, and I would tell them, it's 85 degrees here. And they're saying it's negative 15. So
we love it.
Oh, I know. You just hunker down. You have all your books. Jerome Preisler is up in Maine. And, he writes the Tom Clancy Net Force books and his own, wonderful books. And he just hunkers down in the wintertime because he's surrounded by books. And I'm sure you're surrounded by books.
Yeah, there's something about the winter that's very creative, and maybe that's why we have so many writers up here. Partly it's because we can live anywhere we want to, and we want to be in a beautiful place, and this is a beautiful place. But there's winter creativity that's very powerful. I think as things get gray outside, as the landscape turns white, it's like suddenly your own imagination becomes very colorful to fill in. Fill in the colors, and that's when I write the best.
Have you ever gotten obsessed with an author that, like, you just want to read everything they've ever written?
I've read everything, of course, that Conan Doyle ever wrote, and I've read most of J.R.R. Tolkien. I think it's the fantasy writers that tend to obsess us the most, because they have created worlds that we love so much, we can't wait to return to them.
So, but I assume you're an eclectic kind of reader, that you will read a lot of different types of things.
I will. I read across all genres, except for sports. I don't really read much sports. And to be honest, I don't read much military fiction, because it feels a little bit unfamiliar to me.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm a military fiction person. I think because I studied Latin when I was in high school, and I was one of the only, when you in high school, you have first year Latin, the class might have 23 people, and then second year it drops down to 18, and it dwindles down. And I made it to fourth year Latin, where we were translating, Caesar's skull. And so I got really involved in military because of that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that I understand. I mean, when you're talking about military history, that would be pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and then I lived in Europe. And so once I was living in Europe, I was like, when you're traveling in Europe every, 10 miles, you have a battlefield. So you,
right.
You sort of, and since my husband was military, it was sort of a natural thing that I could keep him. He would take me to Paris whenever I wanted. because along the way I would take different routes and do different battlefields, and he didn't care that my ultimate goal was to get to Paris. So, you know, so I was tricky, but it was lots of fun. Well, you know, I just want to, you know, tell people that I know they want to know, did you go on set? I get this question. Did you go on set when it was filming? I don't know how, you know, much you like to talk about that side of your work. I mean, you have to be very proud of what they've done. And of course, just give us a little insight.
Yeah, not only have I been on set, I was in the show the last season. They invited me to come play a part, a speaking part. And I said, what part do I play? And they said, you're going to play yourself. So I was in the last episode of Rizzoli and Isles in the last season. And the story is about the ladies go to a crime writers festival. So there they are, and they're asked, do you want to meet this writer named Tess Garrison? So I showed up in the scene, and I met my fictional characters. It was really funny, but I think the best part about it was just getting the sense of what it's like to be an actor, to be on the set, to show up for your makeup and your costume, to get your own trailer, and to see how hard the work is. That one scene was done, I don't know, it took half the day to write, to shoot that one scene. It was very short.
I know.
It has to be shot from different angles. It took almost most of the day for me to shoot that one scene.
I know, people don't realize, and it is so much fun to be on set, but people do not realize how much work it is. And, it's lots of fun, but it is a lot of work, too. So, that's funny.
It's hard to keep the emotions alive for 4 hours. I can't. It's like to do a dramatic scene for somebody who's supposed to be showing their grief. I mean, how do you keep that up for 4 hours? That takes a lot of energy.
And so how did you find the girls?
Oh, they're a lot of fun. You know, they're, I will say that they are more beautiful in person than they are on television. They really are. They're stunning, two stunning ladies. And they were very welcoming. I think, you know, I've been on the set, I probably was on the set twice before. And both times I was welcomed very warmly by everybody, including the showrunner and the writer. So I had a great time on the set.
Okay. Well, that now will satisfy my listeners, because they all want to know, you know, if you like the show, and if you, you know, I like the show. I'm not a great television, I'm so busy reading books. I don't watch that much television, so I didn't see that episode. But I've seen, of course, quite a few of them. And so, but my listeners are like, oh my gosh, some of them have seen, especially during the pandemic.
There's something about going returning to a show you've watched multiple times. It's sort of comfort television viewing. I do that myself with other television shows too. I can watch The Big Bang Theory again and again and again.
Exactly. So, you know, but my listeners were interested in, is Angie, how is she? Is she nice? And is Sasha nice? And, you know. Of course, they call them Rizzoli and Isles. They actually don't know their names. Many of them don't know the actresses' names. I hate to say that to them, but they call them Rizzoli and they call them Isles.
Well, that just shows you that you know, the parts have taken over their identities, at least on television.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for most of the emails I got from people, they say, "Well, what's Rizzoli really like? Is she really like that?" So I think it's terrific that I have to watch that episode to see you in it, because
the episode is called, I think, There Be Ghosts, something like that.
Okay, well, everybody, all my listeners out there, you have to watch for that one, and it's because it's repeated daily, and of course it's for you. It's like cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. So,
well, you know, that was one of the great things about having a television show is that I get paid a consultant fee for every episode for consulting me for anything. So I end up getting paid for no work whatsoever.
Well, that is another joy that comes from writing. So I just want to thank you. I don't know, are you talking about the next book? Is it going to be another book? My listeners want to know.
Yes, I am. I am actually doing the final revisions of the next book. It is not a Resilient Isles book. It is a book that is based on my hometown here, where we have. I live in a little town in Maine. I mean, a small town, and I discovered some 30 years ago that we have a lot of retired CIA as my neighbors. So, I just finished writing a story which I'm titling Spyville about. A group of retired spies, and what happens when a dead body shows up on one of their driveways.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
No, it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Well, everybody, the new book, the new Resilient Isles, is Listen to Me. And, of course, it's by Tess Gerritsen. And people, they can find you all over the place. So she has a website. She's on Facebook. She's on everywhere. And she's just a very happy author. That's what I can say.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
And very, I know that you're very involved in helping people. So I want to just say I think you're terrific. And it's been really an honor to have you on Joy on Paper today, Tess Gerritsen.
Thank you. Thanks for talking.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay. Well, she's nice. We're going to have a few commercials, then we'll be right back, and I will talk about climate.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with E.A. Smeraldo. And we are going to be talking climate change. And the name of her book is The Silent Count. I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, E.A. Smeraldo. What do I call you?
Oh, please call me E.A. Thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay, E.A. Well, okay, where do we start with this book? It is it's fascinating. tell us a little bit about, you know, we're talking here climate. Everybody's talking climate. And we're also talking about nuclear. You are a scientist, right?
Yes.
And so you know a lot about nuclear energy. And, things are going crazy over in the Ukraine right now. So where does this book come in? How this, you know, sometimes a book comes out at sort of the right time when people are interested in a subject. So perhaps this was a good timing on your part.
Well, unfortunately, you're correct. The climate is I think we can see all around us, it's not doing great. So I think that has factored in. But I started writing this book some time ago. In fact, I thought the climate problems that we have would be solved by the time I finished writing it. And little did I know, here in 2022, we'd still be worried, in fact, worried even more so than ever. As a nuclear engineer, I have always felt that nuclear power should be part of the solution because it doesn't release greenhouse gases into the air. So in that sense, that is part of the book. And the main character is a young woman who's a nuclear engineer, and she wants to save the planet. Very idealistic. But it's a thriller, so as you can imagine, things go off the rails in a big way.
Oh, they certainly do. They certainly do. And let's talk about this character. By the way, I love the name Dara. I think it's really cute. It's a name that just appeals to me. And so it starts off, Dara, her life is a bit of a mess. So explain about her and what she's up to.
So Dara is a recent PhD graduate and is just saddled with student loans, as so many young people are. And because of her debt, you know, she has to make certain decisions. Like, she has an idea for solving the climate problem. She wants to be an entrepreneur, but she just can't do it because she's got to make money to pay the bills. So meanwhile, she's had a recent broken engagement. Her boyfriend has found someone else and moved on. And in fact, he's moved on and is now he was a musician. He was nowhere fast when she was with him, but now he's becoming more and more famous. So Dara has to see his billboard everywhere. And so that's part of her woes. And then her father is a gambling addict, and poor Dara just has all these problems. And she's used to being the superstar in school, but now she started a new job in the government to try to, as I said, make ends meet and pay off these bills. And she's just not cutting it, according to her boss. Her work is great, but she's just too introverted and not a team player and all those things that bosses say that make us so upset. Dara has a lot is going on with Dara, but as I said, she has an idea. She sees a problem. She wants to solve it, but she makes a lot of decisions that are based on that end up causing her to trust the wrong people.
And therein lies the problem, trusting the wrong people, especially when you're working for the government. So you like, oh boy, she's in for it here. This is it's lots of fun. The reading, you know, as I was reading the story, I think it's so strange. We're still with the USA Russia business. As you said, you thought the climate change thing would be over. I don't know when you started writing this book. You lived in hope, and no way is that going to happen. And now with all of this insanity with Russia, who knows what's going to happen?
You're right. And in fact, Russia, you know, we've had cooperation with Russia for many years on things like nuclear safety. This is in reality. I used to work in this area. I'm now an independent consultant as a nuclear engineer, and I specialize in nonproliferation. But for years, I was in technical cooperation with the government. And anyway,
you know, we had so much. We have cooperation with the space station. Unfortunately, that's going to be phased out due to our problems with Russia. We have had long-term cooperation on nuclear fusion. So in the novel, there is a visiting scientist, just as we've had in the United States for many years, which I think the novel is kind of set slightly in the future. So my hope is that we'll go back to the way things were and maybe settle our differences, at least to the point where we can cooperate on these important issues. Because nuclear safety is not, you know, there are no borders when it comes to nuclear safety. So we all have to, you know, an accident in one country is really an accident everywhere, because people think, well, my reactor could blow up next, or my reactor could have a meltdown next. So we all have to be careful for that.
Well, one of the things that has occurred with this Ukrainian war is that people have become aware that there was so much nuclear energy in the Ukraine. Most people didn't know there was anything in the Ukraine. I think before this war, you'd ask people, what's in the Ukraine? And they'd say, nothing. Now they realize that it is really the breadbasket of Europe and also the energy basket of Europe.
Oh, yes. And you know, the Ukrainian operates safely for years. In fact, I was that was one of my projects. I went to Zaporizhia power plant, which is the one that is now the Russians have trying to take it over, and they're connecting their own grid to it and stealing the power. I'd like to think that you know, it certainly is dangerous. People are shelling. They're apparently the. You know, we don't want their workers to be hurt, and then their decimeters, their equipment could be ruined. Apparently, the Chernobyl plant, the Russians looted it and took a lot of those important the equipment that they had. So that is pretty dangerous. I will say though that as far as something really super catastrophic. Well, you know, the U.S. government has they did an experiment actually in the 80s where they flew a plane into something that simulated a reactor with the 12-foot concrete walls, and the plane disintegrated into a zillion pieces, but the power plant, the walls were completely fine. They were just barely scratched. So my hope is that nothing too irreversible happens. So let's hope and pray.
I don't know. You know, it is frightening. And that's why I think, you know, for you, coming out with this book at this time, I think that perhaps if you can get to enough people, at least they'll start understanding something about nuclear energy and perhaps think about climate. Although, I don't know. It's almost like overload, you know, we get crazy about this subject.
Yes. I'm more of a realist, I think, in terms of climate, especially, I mean, we're, as Americans, you know, we're so used to our freedoms. We, you know, I've read about some ideas people have on how we can solve our problems. No more cars or only electric vehicles or, I mean, I just don't know that that's realistic for now, because electric vehicles, even with the, you know, the subsidies that have been offered, are still very expensive for a lot of people, and our grid just isn't prepared to support all these electric vehicles. That said, I'd love it if 50 years from now, you know, if we just had a real mix of energy possibilities. You know, I'm all for renewables, not just you know, solar and wind and all that great stuff, but we're still in a position where, you know, in order to store the energy, you need these batteries that need these minerals, and these minerals are in other countries, and, you know, becomes a security issue. So there's just so much that we have to think about. It's not just the one, you know, a solution of planting more trees or riding your bike to work, unfortunately.
No, it's not. Now, the fun thing about your book, I think what I liked about it was that there is this mix of her personal life, so that you're not overwhelmed by, you know, science. Science is fun and it's great, and you write about it beautifully. But you also have some romance in there, and so I found that was interesting. I also love the dynamics of the dealing with the president and senators and all of that political side, which. Apparently, you have had some experience with that too, so you know that it is not easy.
No. Well, you know, one thing about being a federal employee, not a political appointee, is that, you know, you are serving the president who is in office at the time. So, I started writing this book some time ago, and several administrations came along. So, the president, I never mention any. Party. I think I do try to draw from reality, but it seems like all the different administrations have had different ways of looking at climate change. So the president in this book is really more interested in his poll numbers than anything else. So it's only when his poll numbers start to drop that he decides, well, maybe we'll do something. So he does then allow Dara to achieve her dream of doing something about the climate. Her idea is quite audacious. If you'd like to know the origin story of,
I don't know if you should. I don't think you should. Don't reveal it. People, get the book. Give me a break here, people. It's called The Silent Count. It's called A Thriller by E. A. Smeraldo. So I want it to remain a thriller. We're not going to.
Okay.
It's a reveal. They have to read it.
Thank you.
I think they have to really read it, and they will. It is intriguing. And as I said, also because there's a love story and there's a Russian.
Oh, I know. She does. Her heart gets broken, but then she finds this other guy.
I know.
He's let's just say he's a hottie. He's got everyone look, you know, everyone wants him in the office, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Me too.
I know. See, that's just it. It's like, well, there's the Me Too, but this really isn't that because she wants it as well.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, if you're the writer, you control it, and you can write, if you want a little bit of a turn on, you can have it, and you got it here for us, and it makes it fun, it makes it a fun read. And as I said, I like the reveal. I like learning. I did learn some stuff that I didn't know about, and that was great. I always love that. And I love that it made me think about things. I do worry a lot about the climate and whether this or that or whatever. I come from northern Michigan, and one of the things that they wanted to do up in northern Michigan is put a whole bunch of windmills, and this is something I'm against because I don't know if you've ever been to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. One of the most beautiful things about the Upper Peninsula, and we're called Youpers, people who live there, we're called Youpers. The most beautiful thing about it is that there's nothing. I mean, nothing. No. So we can go for miles and not see anybody. There's nobody. It's empty. We have a farm that's 80 acres, and we can just walk, and there's nobody. And the most beautiful thing, there's not a sound, except maybe a bird every once in a while. There's no sound. And then if people who have these windmills in the southern part of Michigan, they have these windmills, the noise is horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I don't want anyone ruining the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. That's why we go there, because there's nothing.
Well, you know, I agree with you. And we look at countries like Germany, which decided to phase out its nuclear program. They have great, you never heard about any type of accidents happening in Germany. And they have great engineering, and they decided to phase it out for, you know, no real good reason. And meanwhile, so they have, you know, windmills and so on. If you go to Germany now, you see their beautiful countryside with many windmills.
Oh, it's ugly.
That's fine. But, well, yeah, I agree.
No, it is. It's really ugly, and it's horribly noisy.
And it kills the birds, and they don't have enough power. When the wind dies down, they have to buy their power from, like, the French, who have 70% nuclear power. So, you know, and then they had to fire up more fossil fuel plants to make up the difference as well. So things aren't going well for Germany in phasing out.
No. And worse than that, and what some people don't realize is that in cold weather, you actually have to heat the windmills. So you have to use energy to heat the windmills or they will freeze. And so they're not working, they're not producing anything, and you actually have to pay money to heat the windmills. It is insane. I'm telling you, it's crazy. And the ones that they put out at sea, they don't last. I mean, I'm sorry.
And now we're learning about the solar panels and the waste after the solar panels' lifespan is over. I mean, there's a lot of problems that we have to solve still.
Yeah, and if people, I want people to read your book, The Silent Count, and then I want people, please take a moment to be silent and think about all the stuff that's going on around you. How much of it is done by people who just want to make money and they come out with these things, and then how much, if we could actually sit down and be logical and work together, if we could solve this problem. Anyway, that's what I'm hoping.
Yes, I hope so.
Okay, well.
Faith in the people of the future.
That's right. Sure. Well, E.A. Smeraldo, a lovely Italian name. The name of the book is The Silent Count. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Sure. EASmeraldo.com. And that's S-M-I-R-O-L-D-O. And also, you know, my social media. I even have a YouTube channel that I'm starting. I have songs in the book. It's like a soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention you because you're a musician, too. So, yeah, explain your YouTube channel. That'll be fascinating.
Sure. Well, there's a character in the book who's a musician. That stars X, and throughout the book, there are song lyrics. You know, I used to be, as I said, I was in a band, and I sang, and I won a lot of songwriting awards, and was nominated for something called a Whammy, which is the Washington Area Music Awards in D.C., where I live. So, I'm starting to post some of the songs from the novel that I performed. And I'm also a guitar playing fool, so you'll hear my guitar playing.
Okay, well, that's great. So everybody, check out the YouTube channel. That will be lots of fun to see because multi-talented, multi-nuclear scientist, composer, musician, and that's all come down into this wonderful book. I think it's fascinating. It's a fun read. As I said, I love always a little, well, I love a sexy guy in any book. So I have an appreciation. And so I think it's a fun book to read to everybody. It's called The Silent Count. It's available online where books are sold. And I think that it's come out at the right time. People, get it and learn something and enjoy a really fun read.
Thank you.
Okay, great talking to you. E.A., I like you. I think you're great.
You too, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Whoa. You know, this is fun. I like a book. Well, I like any book with science in it because it's just fun to learn. And then it's also great when she's got in here. She's got a lot of good stuff. I love it. I think you'll really enjoy this book. I was really taken with it. And there's a lot of things that she reveals in there. And I think it's just fun. It's called The Silent Count. It's a thriller, and it is a thriller. She did a good job on this. So it's her first book, and I think now that she's gotten the hang of it, she's going to be writing more because it's fun. It's a fun read. And again, I get so thrilled always when I find a new author, somebody who, you know, just comes along and has written a book, and sometimes it's very timely, and I think in this case it is timely. Because she does talk here quite a bit about the Russians. And I think it's, people, we have to pay attention. This is insane what's going on over there. And unfortunately, we have this, this news cycle kind of thing where something will be of interest for a few weeks, you know, with the cable networks, and they'll push a story, and then they forget about it, and then they, you know, they just don't mention it, and they don't go back and say, what the heck is going on? And it's not getting better, and it's getting worse, and we should start demanding answers. And one of the ways, I think, if you read this book, you'll get some ideas. Because I love the interaction he or she has between presidents and the president and senators and all the politicians that are involved in all of these decisions. So I just really enjoyed this. And again, I really wanted to say I was really thrilled to talk to Tess Gerritsen. She is a fantastic person. You know, this is when somebody is a doctor and then she's becomes a writer, and she's done all this that she's accomplished. I think it's great. So again, her book is Listen to Me, and that is a good name for a book. Listen to Me, and you can always listen to me, because I'm right here every Tuesday and Thursday on Joy on Paper, because I want to encourage you, and I have so much fun getting emails from those of you who have started writing. Many of you during the pandemic. The pandemic is over, we hope, and now you're trying to figure out what the heck are you going to do with what you've written. And so I'm always available if you send me an email. It's patsy.radio@gmail.com. I'll be happy to sort of steer you in the right direction, sometimes telling you a particular interview that you might want to listen to. And I'm putting up more and more of my interviews. And I also, you know, want to encourage you to continue writing. Don't give up. Don't make rash decisions. Don't decide right away that you're going to publish something yourself without going through an editor, trying to improve it. You have to get serious and take it as a craft and as a business. There's so much to learn before you actually either find an agent or before you decide to self-publish. So all of those things are important. And one of the things, of course, is the legal aspect of protecting your rights. So we're going to have Bill Larson on pretty soon, and he's going to talk about that. Meanwhile, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel or whatever channel Rizzoli and Isles is on. My goodness, can you imagine that? Wow, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. She is having fun. And meanwhile, and I hope that Carol J. Perry will have fun when one of her series is picked up, because she really writes so well and it's so much fun. And October 25th is going to be Carol J. Perry Day here on Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything you do for me. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, and I have a nice salute, because I should have been a general. I would have been a great general. And today I would be living on a general's pension. Ooh, wouldn't that be nice? Everybody, bye-bye now.